Welcome into another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It is the week of June 13th, and I am Dan Canobio. He is former world champion Chris Algieri, and Chris, the boxing world is buzzing, my friend. How are you?
Doing great. I mean, when boxing is doing well, you know I'm doing well. And like you said, boxing is currently ablaze. We got great fights, awesome fights that are happening, being made, and they're actually living up to the hype. So let's do it.
Yeah, awesome weekend spent in New York City at our event. And then we all headed over to the Garden. We watched Teofimo Lopez pick up a huge win over Josh Taylor. We will discuss that on this show. We'll talk about Canelo and his upcoming opponents because it's starting to whittle down. And also, very quickly, just saw Spence and Crawford, their first press conference. They're going to do a bunch of press conferences this week. I loved it. I thought it was the right amount of trash talk, the right amount of respect, and the right amount of hype. I know you saw the pictures of them facing off. What did you think about that first presser? They're finally faced off, and that fight is happening. It's happening next month.
Well, both of these guys, they're such a high level for so long. They're used to the media. They're used to press conferences. They also are there. I think they're both really excited to fight each other because they have a foil in front of them that's a perfect matchup. And I understand where they are in terms of where they're sitting in terms of fighting a guy like that in front of them and being super excited about it. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to be buzzing all the way until fight. And it's only going to make them that much better. But they're both classy guys. They both will talk shit, and they're both are professional enough to keep it within the limits. You know, they're not going to be headbutting each other at the press conferences, but they're going to spur on the public just enough and talk just enough trash that it's going to keep interest and it's going to build until fight night.
There are levels of talking trash. Like Tank and Ryan got personal, started getting into things that we didn't want to discuss. We've seen that in boxing all the time. Gets into race stuff. You see personal lives. This isn't that. This is like professional trash talk. These are guys talking about, oh, Spence is like, I broke this guy's eye. And Bud is like, well, I'm the best I'm a three-division world champ. And Spence is like, well, who the hell did you beat at 135? Who'd you beat at 140? This is your first real big fight. I love that back and forth stuff. And them talking about the history is what really got me jazzed up. Like Crawford's talking about how, you know, there was the Sugar Ray Robinson era. Go up and down all the weight classes, up and down our welterweight. You know, there was Sugar Ray Leonard's era. There was Tommy Hearns' era. There was Floyd, Oscar, Manny. Now this is going to be my time. That's what they should really lean into is the legacy of this fight and the history and all that's on the line. And probably the winner will be number one pound for pound. I can't wait. We're going to be at the press conference in New York City. Me and Ronnie are heading over. Spence Crawford, in addition to the other great things that are going on in boxing, is coming, Chris, and it can't come soon enough.
Yeah, and it's a fight that lives up to all the hype, I believe. I mean, I believe the matchup is that good. I just hope everything goes well and they both make it to the ring. They're both healthy and they both fight their asses off because boxing deserves it.
And we have a big meeting with the sales department here to see if we will be going to Las Vegas. Looking good. It's looking good. We got to be there. We can't not be at Spence Crawford.
As good as we did for Ryan and Garcia, I mean, Ryan and Tank,
numbers.
It only makes sense. Numbers. We're putting numbers up, people. We're putting numbers up.
Talking about numbers, Teofimo Lopez is unhappy with the amount of money he got to fight Josh Taylor. He did get a huge win on Saturday night at the theater inside of the Garden, a upset win. He was the underdog. But right away afterwards on ESPN, he goes on with Max Kellerman, and he says that I am announcing my retirement at the age of 25. Chris, I will ask you, do we believe Teofimo that he is stepping away from the sport?
Absolutely not. I believe, you know, Tio always speaks from the heart. I mean, he wears his heart on his chest. He whatever crosses his mind comes out. He has no filter. And I think that makes him endearing. That's why a lot of the public likes him. That's why I like him. I mean, he's a really, really good kid. I know him personally and outside the ring and outside of the media. He's a great kid. And, you know, listen, he speaks what's on his mind. And I think after a massive win like that, even though it wasn't physically grueling, I've been in fights like that. Those emotionally grueling fights that they take your spirit after the fight. He's like, I'm tired, man. I'm sure he is. Training camps are hard. A fight like that where you have to be disciplined for 12 rounds against a very dangerous opponent, it saps your essence. And I think that he was just speaking just raw. And I think he looked back on that and goes, hey, listen, that was actually a pretty good idea that I said that, because I have a really good bargaining marketing chip now that I can make some more money. And listen, he deserves it. These promoters need him now. After a win like that, not only do the promoters need him, boxing needs him. And he understands that. He knows that. And it's going to work out to some dollar signs. Is it going to be eight figures like they're asking for? Probably not.
No, nine figures.
Oh, nine. Yeah, forget it.
Bump it up a few more zeros on that. He wants like $100 million, he said, because I brought Disney and top. I mean, he says.
That's, dude, eight figures was silly. Nine is like now we're what are we talking about? Right. Come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, even eight figures is silly. So nine is completely out of the question. You're not Floyd Mayweather. You know, eight figures is you're not Canelo. So yeah, high sevens. Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I you deserve that.
Yeah. He's smart too, Phil, in terms of keeping the conversation going. I do think he'll be back in the ring. ESPN is reporting that he made $2.3 million for this fight. So he said a million. It's definitely more than that. I think he can get even more at a top.
Yeah,
rank.
But you pay New York taxes, and then you pay your team, and then you training camps are not cheap. So, guys, listen, a million's never a million. Everybody at home, I'm saying that again. A million is never a million.
Well, doubled it. But, I mean, he's saying I only made a million when it turns out he made 2.3. But I think he wants more, and I think he deserves more. This is a negotiation tactic. Do I think he's tired? Obviously, yes, like all the things you just said. He also... He puts his personal life out there. His very personal, his life is an open book, and we know that he is going through a bitter divorce with his wife or ex-wife. They have a kid. He hadn't be able to see the kid. That is coming into play here, but I know for a fact that he signed to Top Rank for a very long term deal. Maybe they'll increase the money as they should, because look at Top Rank. They on the verge of maybe losing Haney. You know, Tyson Fury's getting up there in age. Beterbiev's getting up there in age. They really don't have that many other stars. I mean, in a way, of course, but he is fighting mostly over in Japan. They need to keep these marquee names around, and Teofimo is definitely one of them. I think he'll be back in the ring. Maybe he takes some time off, but there's so many big fights for him at 140. In terms of in the ring, I thought this was interesting. Like, his dad now is getting, like, a round of applause. His dad is getting praise because he finally realized that his son is at his best when he's boxing and he's counterpunching, which he did on Saturday night in that fight beautifully. Styles make fights. Taylor came in a lot. Southpaw, too, which went fed right into Lopez. But it's just funny how it all works. Teofimo last week was a crazy man that on the verge, maybe he shouldn't fight. His dad is ruining his career. Now we're looking at Teofimo Sr. as one of the better trainers in the sport because he drew up an excellent game plan to beat Taylor.
Listen, he's crazy like a fox. They both are. Both Sr. and Junior are both. They're crazy like a fox. They live on the brink of chaos. We've talked about that the last couple of shows. And you know, listen, at the end of the day, the kid makes it work. I mean, he's a true fighter, but he's also a strategist. And he went in there. He executed a very disciplined game plan. When he is dialed in, he's damn near unbeatable. He looked so good that night. You were sitting right next to me, Dan, and yeah. I was speaking under my breath about what things that he was doing, the things that I was seeing really early on. And I'm like, oh boy. This kid, I'm like, I said in the second round, I go, oh, he found his rhythm. Josh is in trouble. And unless Josh can stem the tide and change the momentum, which he never did, it's going to be a really long night for him. And it's exactly what happened. T.O. He's a brilliant young fighter, brilliant young mind. I mean, he's 25 years old, 25. I mean, he's got so much more to give to this sport. So many more legendary nights. I mean, his pedigree at this point, the guys that he's beaten up to already, is just, it's crazy. It almost blows out all the other guys around the weight class. I mean, very, very, very impressive young man. And for him to be able to do what he did that night, I'm happy. I'm proud of him. That was an awesome, awesome fight against a very, very good fighter. And I'm taking nothing away from Josh Taylor. He didn't fight a bad fight. He just had someone in front of him that he just couldn't figure out that night. And Teo was super disciplined and stayed ahead of him. And that happens a lot when you got guys that are that good. If you get ahead and you're able to stay ahead, it makes really good fights not even that close. So right. That's what we saw that night. We saw two really good fighters, but one guy just had a better game plan. He was able to execute, and he stayed disciplined throughout, so it made the fight not close.
Yeah, you take a look at Teofimo, who is now a two-division world champion, two-time lineal champion. Beat Lomachenko, who beat the man, beat Taylor, who beat the man. That is impressive. Two-time Ring magazine champion. That Ring magazine belt means something in the history of the sport. Yes. But look at it in 2019 on. He beat Nakatani, who was a very tough fight. He very beat tough. Comey, knocked him out in the second huge round. Lomachenko.
No one ever beat him like that.
Right. Beat Comey, Lomachenko. Obviously, you saw that. Everyone saw that fight. The Cambosos is the blemish. This is the rough night at the office, is the outlier here. And then the Campa fight and the Sandor Martin fight, everyone keeps bringing up to me when I posted this. It's like, well, he should have two losses because he lost to Sandor Martin. It was a close fight. I thought Teofimo won a split decision. It wasn't like some like egregious Catterall, Taylor type of fight. Like, I thought Teofimo won that one. And then obviously moving up to 140, fighting the best guy there, Josh Taylor. And this is all at the age of 25. I mean, I forget that he's 25 sometimes because, you know, he has all these personal life issues, like real life stuff. It's nuts. He's putting together a hell of a resume, and I don't think he's going to walk away. I think he'd be very foolish to do so. He's already appearing back on pound-for-pound lists, even though I don't agree with them. Ring Magazine, what are you doing having Lomachenko on the pound-for-pound list still and also leapfrogging after a loss? It's a whole other story for another day. But how do you think Teofimo does at 140 now against some of the bigger names? Like, how would you say Teofimo does against a Haney or a Progre?
You know, if he stays busy, and like I said, when he's dialed in, I mean, he's damn near unbeatable. I mean, he is that good. I think I can see him beating both those guys. I can see him even beating Progre, especially with the kind of game plan that he had. And he showed good power in the fight. He was able to touch Josh and hurt him and keep him honest all night long, which I was worried about. I thought that I was really worried because I haven't seen the power at 140. Anything that was going to deter world-class guys. But with Josh, he was able to crack him and leave him thinking about shots often. And his ability to be explosive and to stay explosive through 12 rounds was very impressive. His gas tank looked great, and that's been an issue for him in the past. He controlled the pace. He's punchers, guys like him, they need to rest while they're fighting. They don't fight the whole round. He's making his moves, whatever, but he's so explosive. He puts you on notice, keeps you all cautious. And he was able to do that with Taylor, which Taylor is normally a volume puncher and never gets tired and comes forward and throws bombs and, you know, keeps throwing and throws combinations, fights in the pocket. He was completely unable to do that because of Teo's explosiveness and his ability to set the tone, draw a line in the sand and be like, all right, you're staying there. I'm staying here. I'm going to hit you. You're not going to hit me. When he's able to do that, he's going to be able to beat anybody in that division, yeah. Progre included. With Teo, just put good fighters in front of him.
Yeah.
He does better. Yeah. Put the most dangerous man around in front of him.
He doesn't do well when he's the favorite.
No, he does not do well against guys he's supposed to blow out. He doesn't get up for the fight. He needs to be up. I think he needs to be scared. I think he needs to have a little bit of fear in him to make him do the extra work in the gym and to show up on fight night and be really dialed in. Because when he loses focus, he's just not the same fighter. So, yeah, bring on Progre, bring on Haney, bring on all the Ramirez, bring on those guys. I want to see those fights right away. Don't even give him an easy fight. Keep him in tough fights.
This is like, I'm thinking the same thing. It's like, it's just a matter of him getting up for big fights because the Cambosos one obviously he was a huge favorite and he obviously had the worst night of his life in Campa. He blew him out, but also Martin, he was in the late replacement, so he wasn't exactly up for that one. But I actually think that Haney gives Teofimo a tougher fight style-wise than Progre. Because look at Progre, southpaw, yeah. Similar style to Josh Taylor, going to walk right into shots just like we saw with Josh Taylor. I think that Teofimo can handle Progre. Haney, with that jab, sticking in his face, boxing and moving, kind of saw what Sandor Martin did boxing and moving. I know they're not the same type of fighter. But I think Haney gives Teofimo more issues than Progre does at 140. True or false?
You Twitter knuckleheads who I think that Haney is not that good. It's insane to me. I have people telling me I know nothing about boxing because the things I say about Devin Haney.
Love that.
No, that just shows you literally know nothing about boxing. Because Haney's style is so difficult to deal with. That style of fighter, the guy who will be a consummate boxer, who will fight at length, who has speed and endurance, and can move, and is big and long, is the worst guy to be in a ring with. It is a nightmare sparring guys like that. It is a nightmare fighting guys like that. If you've never been in a boxing ring, if you never got touched up by one of those guys, you have no idea what you're talking about. Mm. So these people who are talking to me about Haney, oh, he's soft, he's this, he's that. What you just said, him being a more difficult challenge than a guy like Progre, I would agree. Because he is an enigma. He's a style you have to break. You've got to be able to work through it. No one's done it yet. Lomachenko was close. He fought a really good fight. But at the end of the day, the scorecards were that close. So go either way. You know, Haney won the fight. Historically, that's all there is to say at this point.
Yeah,
but no one's figured him out.
Right. That brings us to our next topic is for weeks now with these big fights at 135, starting with Tank and Ryan, and then going up to Haney, Lomachenko, and now Teofimo Taylor. It's like we're throwing Shakur as well. We're throwing together all these matchups, and we're trying to find what's the right one. What's one think it's going to happen? It's a great thing for us. I love it. It's so intriguing to find these different big fights that are going to sell, that are going to be good fights. But I think the picture at 135 and 140 is starting to become more clear every week or every month when these guys are fighting. To me, I think at 135, Tank and Shakur are going to be there for the longest amount of time and are not going to move. I think that is the fight we can start building towards at 135. At 140, I think it's Teofimo and Haney in terms of biggest names, best type of fight, most marketable. There it is. Ryan and Rolly. I understand it's not on the same level as these fights, but it's a marketable fight, and it's another name that's in the sport, and Ryan and Rolly both very popular. I don't know what that means for Regis Progray, who is a title holder, who fights this weekend. I think if Haney goes to Matchroom, then obviously Haney-Progray is a really fun fight too. Progray-Teofimo is a fun fight, but I think those three that I just mentioned before that, those are the fights that I think are starting to fall into place as the biggest ones that we can make in the sport at those two weight classes that are now dominating the sport.
I'm going to put Progray in a similar boat with JC Ramirez,
mm-hmm.
who is a very dangerous guy, former world champion, has had tough fights with, you know, had a tough fight with Taylor, looked really good in his last couple of fights. He was able to stop Comey. He was able to, you know, he had a really tough fight with Cepeda, which when Cepeda was really streaking. But yeah, Progray, listen, those guys are, they're almost like they're on their way out age-wise. They're aging out. Progray's 35. You know, so yes, he's still a dangerous guy. Stylistically, he's still a popular guy, but he hasn't been super active, especially at the higher levels. He hasn't really fought a dangerous guy since he fought Taylor.
Right.
And, you know, getting in back into the mix with these guys at 35 years old, you know, it's a taller mountain to climb that way. But they're both super talented guys. Ramirez and Progray, they're both dangerous. They both could get wins over any one of these guys. I don't really think they will. But yeah, no, I think I agree with you. Tio Haney, it's palpable. It's there. They're both going to be at 40. They've both been coming up. Tank and Shakur, I think Shakur will be able to move up sooner than Tank. I don't think Tank's ever going to fight at 40 again. Unless there's some fight that he's chasing. He won't right. physically need to. Shakur will soon. He's still growing. But I think he has a lot of work to do at 35. I think he's going to clear out that division. And it's going to be Tank is going to be the final boss for him to take on before he moves up. And then Ryan Rolly is basically a glorified YouTuber fight. They're nowhere near the level of all the other guys that we're talking about. But it's an entertaining fight. It's going to get a ton of eyes. They're going to make a ton of money. It's going to be a really fun buildup, and it'll probably be a pretty fun fight.
Yeah.
Even though I think Ryan's a much better fighter in every way. But it will probably be entertaining. So yeah, it's a glorified YouTube fight.
I think there's room for a Ryan Rolly fight because we're getting some of the fights that we want. Like I say this all the time.
Oh, definitely. It's a fun fight.
Right.
The same thing. It makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. The same thing with like the Jake Paul theory I was always had. It's like when Jake Paul fights are supplementing like big fights like Haney Lomachenko or Ryan Tank or Spence Crawford, then it finds its lane and it knows what it is. When like a Jake Paul fight is the main attraction on the boxing schedule for the year, then the promoters aren't doing their job. Like Ryan Rolly can fit perfectly fine in December. I don't know if there's going to be a belt on the line. That remains to be seen. Like Rolly may have to vacate, which we've talked about on previous episodes. So that means that the WBA belt might open up. I know Puelo is going to get another crack at it, even though he tested positive for PEDs. There's Subaru Matias floating out there, who, like we spoke
bad
about,
dude.
Very bad,
bad dude.
100% knockout ratio, or just bad about. Dude. He has 19-1, but 19 knockouts. No one talks about him, not because like he's avoided or he's the boogeyman. He just has zero profile. I mean, he's been around for a while now. He's now a champ. Like we said this on the post fight show, he's that, you know, high risk, low reward type of fight. Like no one's calling him out. He doesn't even have a promotional team right now. He's a free agent. He has a belt, but like he's kind of in no man's land.
He's the 140 pound marauder.
Yeah.
He's on the horse, like circling the battlefield, waiting for someone to fight. Like he's out there, he's dangerous. Everyone's aware of him. Everyone's aware he's out there. Everyone knows he's dangerous. He's just biding his time and he's being patient, but He does, like you said, he doesn't really have a profile. He doesn't speak the language, so he can really just go out there to take it to Twitter and then go call people out. So yeah, he's in a tough spot. But listen, he's young too, and he's very dangerous, and he's got a punch. When you got a punch, you're always there.
That's why Progress should fight him.
That's a cool fight. It's a very cool fight.
Like,
but force, I think Progress is looking higher. I think he's looking for fights that
he's calling out Adrian Broner.
What's that?
Progray was calling out Broner over the weekend
because it'll get a lot of eyes. So Matias is like you said, he's dangerous, but not a lot of eyes. Non-boxing people are not going to care. Broner, everyone's going to care. It's silly for him to call him out because it doesn't really help.
No, but that just kind of shows you where Progray's mindset is right now. 35 years old,
just getting to that. Yeah. He's either fighting guys that cannot beat him, like we're seeing this weekend, or he's going to try and fight the tip of the top of the iceberg so we can get that big money, which is, you know, his career recently has been very carefully curated and moved very, very smart. Yeah. Early on, he was the marauder. He was the guy that everybody knew about that nobody really knew about. You know, all the boxing people knew about him, but outside no one did. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to fight everybody. He's calling everybody out. He was where Matias is at now. So yeah, in the true meritocracy and in the goodness of the sport, yeah, it would make sense that Progray and Matias would fight, but I don't know if I see that unless it's forced.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that Matias has is the belt, and that does mean something. As much as fans want to say belts don't mean anything, it does. It gets you into these big fights, and promoters want
fans
control the belts.
Yeah. Belts matter.
The networks want control of the belts. The promoters want control of the belts. Matias has something. He has some value if he doesn't have a big profile. Let's quickly talk about Munguia. Derevyanchenko was an awesome fight. I caught the replay, caught some highlights back and forth. Holy goodness gracious. I thought Munguia edged it out in a really tough 12th round. His best win. It also showed kind of the limitations on Munguia. Like, we know he's a great TV fighter. We know that his defense is lacking. But damn, he puts on good fights. And I think now more than ever, it's time for him for a big fight. But we just don't know, like, what division. This one was at 167 and a half. Like, is he a 168-pound guy? Will he try to chase Canelo or Andrade or some of the names at 168? Or is he a 160 guy where he can kind of feast on all the chaos that's going on at 160 with not a clear guy? Like, I like Munguia. He's only 25, which is insane. He's 42-0 at 25. But, like, there's no plan for him. He just talked about all these young guys and how there's these fights that are now, like, becoming more and more clear. Like, what's the fight for Munguia? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it's tough when we're comparing it to these other guys because they have so many dance partners. And he doesn't, you know, because he's not at the level to jump in there with, you know, like the Charlos and the Triple G.
Is he, though? I think he's ready now.
Listen, do I think he's ready? Sure, but like, is he demanding enough to make those fights happen? No, it's not like these guys. It's not like Tio and Haney and Tank and Shakur. These guys, like, they have so much clout. I don't think Munguia does on the world stage, especially. You know, he struggled very badly with Derevyanchenko.
Yeah,
not taking anything away from either man because Derevyanchenko is a badass, but he is 37 years old, and Derevyanchenko had him in a world of trouble, and I believe it was the fourth.
Some people round. Had Derevyanchenko winning.
Yes. I mean, that late knockdown was a major factor. And listen, Munguia looked good that night. We were actually watching it. Well, I was watching it in between rounds of the TO Taylor fight because it was in front of us and one of the press row had it. And I was like, whoa. I'm like, yo, Derevyanchenko almost knocked him out. But yeah, no, it was a hell of a fight. It's a fight of the year type fight, back and forth, a lot of good action. Derevyanchenko put on a fight of a lifetime, and Munguia showed, you know, listen, he's very, very good and he can hang with some of these guys. But at 68, he was fighting a 60 pounder. Derevyanchenko is not a 68 pounder. That was his first time fighting above 160 in a meaningful fight. And he showed out and made it a really good fight, but that's not really where he belongs. And he's 37. I cannot reiterate that enough. He's 37 years old. And Munguia, like you said, is 25.
Yeah, so, yeah. I don't know. I don't know where he's going to fight. I mean, Ryder is out there at 168. Obviously, Benavidez.
Listen, that's a tough fight.
I like Ryder versus
Munguia. He might not be Ryder. Yeah, I like that fight. I like that fight a lot. And listen, that's a good call. That fight might actually happen. That fight makes a lot of sense. It's a dangerous fight for Munguia because a loss to Ryder is a really, really tough pill to swallow for their team. But a win there, especially if it's impressive, it's pretty legitimate.
Yeah, that's like in terms of like the promotional like nonsense. Like Ryder fights on DAZN, he's with Matchroom. They can figure out a way to make that work. The other guys at 168 are all with the PBC. He's not fighting Benavidez. He's not fighting Plant. He's not fighting Morrell. I don't think he'll go to 160. I think
nobody wants to fight Morrell.
Well, yikes. Benavidez might.
That guy's a bad dude.
And at 160, you got Golovkin, Janabek, Carlos Adames, Liam Smith, Lara, Danny Garcia are fighting this summer, I think. So, yeah, it's weird. But I wanted to shine a light on that fight because it was an awesome fight. Derevchenko is a warrior. He might be the most tough luck loser in the last 20 years, or maybe the best fighter never to win a world title in the last 25 years. So shout out to Derevchenko and Munguia.
Sullivan Barrera is another one. Yeah. Another very, very good fighter who never won a world title.
A lot of those guys out there. So shout out to them. I know the big story this weekend was Teofimo and Taylor, but those guys almost stole the shine away because they put on a really good fight. Final topic. This one is loaded, Chris. Canelo Alvarez revealed that he wants a fall fight, and there were a lot of different opponents out there, none of which are those that we want to see. Maybe you at home want to see some of these ones. But according to ESPN reporting, Canelo is looking at two fights for the fall. Jermall Charlo, I guess at 168, or Badu Jack. Badu Jack, the cruiserweight. And that fight would be at a catchweight. I don't know how that would even work. This is a big, steep fall from a Bivol rematch or Benavidez fight. I actually think he's making the right decision by not fighting Bivol. But, man, he was talking about it so much. He was so steadfast about it. And with Benavidez, I think Benavidez offered him $50 million, but then Lukowicz also admits that, yeah, we offered him $50 million, but we already have a deal in place to fight Morel. So what was the point of that $50 million offer? Clout? Like, what's going on with Canelo? This is a lot to digest.
So I had said on Twitter a while ago when Badu Jack beat, what's his name? The cruiserweight champion, yeah. Become cruiserweight Makabu. Champion. Makabu, yeah, I said, I was like, Canelo beats both these guys, no problem. Why would he not clip the cruiserweight and then go get another title or whatever? I was saying it jokingly, but also I was like, I could 100% see that happening because he beats these guys, no problem. But the fact that they're doing it at catchweight means there's not title's not going to be in the line.
No, they are going to figure out a way. I thought you might know this better than I would. Like, this 176, this 176 mean, if they do it at 176, that's nuts because... Because Jack is 40 years old, and he last fight was close to 200 pounds. That's what I mean. That's why this is not as like impressive to me as him going up to 175 and beating Kovalev. Like we
he
just talked about,
literally just fight him at 200 pounds because he beats him anyway. But like, it delegitimizes it so
yes.
much. If you whittle him down 15 pounds for what? 25 pounds for what?
Just to say you have another belt in another weight class. Like, yeah, you did that already with Kovalev, and you tried it again with Bivol, and it went too far. Like, you're a five-division world champ. Like, that's fine. Like, yeah, it's five. Like, you try to make it six?
But especially because he can literally beat him at the weight. I'm telling you now, I'm watching the fight, and I'm like, oh, yeah, Canelo beats both these guys, even at this weight. He is good enough to do that, but...
Okay, so he goes up to 200 in a perfect world and does it legitimately. We saw this happen with Roy Jones when he went up to heavyweight to fight John Ruiz. What happened? Yeah. He went back down to 175, and he was never the same.
Yeah, but he didn't whittle John down. Like, he didn't say, John, you can't be over 220. That's ridiculous. It's the heavyweight. The weight class is that.
Yeah.
If you're going to be cruiserweight champ, the guy's got to be at the weight class. Just because he's 1 pound over the weight class below, that's obnoxious. I really hope that's not what's going
to
happen.
But point being, like, all right, so he goes up to 200 and he does it the legit way. And then is that the end of his career or is he going to go back down to 168? That's ridiculous. That's 35 pounds or 32 pounds. Like... He shouldn't do that.
Well, no, he's not gonna go up to 200. So if he's smart, similar to what Roy Jones did, he's gonna come in at very, very naturally 180 pounds. Canelo walks around up there. You know,
I'm not tall.
He's in the 70s. He's shorter. Yeah, he's like your height. He's gonna be in the. He walks around in the 70s, 75, maybe even 180 easily. And so I think he comes in at 180, 181, 182, and he fights a guy who's 200 at the higher weights. It doesn't matter as much, but speed kills. And that's what Canelo has actually done really well with by moving up because he's fast. He's got quick hands. And he's able to utilize his counterpunching ability, his speed, to beat the taller, bigger guys. And this is just another opportunity to do that as well.
But I
Sherry kinda, Robinson yeah. did it with Joey Maxim, right? He moved up and he weighed exactly the same as he did for his last fight at middleweight. And then he fought at 175. He was literally, I think he was 159. And he fought at 175. He lost, but you know that was also like a million degrees, yeah, apparently. But
I don't know what Canelo's going to do next. I mean, the Jack one I think is far fetched, and we've seen him try to do this history thing. I don't think he knows to go through that anymore. The Bivol one, I still think is there's some hope for that. I think they're just posturing Canelo's side. I think Bivol wants it. He was at our party, and I was like, hey, you're going to fight Canelo? And he's like, I don't know. Like, I think they are just waiting around because look around. Bivol has no one else to fight. So the Benavidez one we just talked about.
Beterbiev is tied up with Callum Smith, which is literally we don't know who's going to come out of that. But you know, the winner of that, I mean, that makes sense for Bivol.
Right, and then there's Benavidez, who I just said is – from what I've seen, is scheduled to fight Morel. So that $50 million offer was kind of like a clout thing, kind of get the headlines out there, kind of put Canelo in a bad light. And that leaves Charlo. Jermall Charlo, who I wanted Canelo to fight 2-3 years ago. I thought this was a marketable fight. I thought it was a good PBC pay-per-view. I thought you could sell this fight. I thought it's intriguing. Let's get Canelo back in the U.S. Let's get Canelo back on the pay-per-view with Showtime Machine behind it. But Charlo hasn't fought in 2 years. Like... But out of all these options, I feel like it might be a Charlo or we see in 2 weeks with Berlanga. If Berlanga knocks out Quigley inside of 5-6 rounds and looks really good, he emerges. There's a lot going on. I don't like the Badou-Jack fight. I like the Bivol one, I guess, better than Charlo. And I really don't like the Berlanga one. So if I was ranking them all.
I think in order of probability, I would go Berlanga, Badou, Charlo.
Bivol last.
And very, very close between one and two, and very wide for number three.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in the sport. Canelo, we're seeing so much success in the sport and so much good fights, and that's without Canelo being in a big fight. And none of these exactly are huge ones. So I haven't seen anything with the heavyweights, but it's all the smaller weights, or right up to 147 with Spencer Crawford. Great show, Chris. Awesome. We covered a lot of ground there. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I want one last thing before we say goodbye. We're closing in on the 9-year anniversary of Chris Algieri becoming a world champion. It happened June 14th, 2014 at Barclays Center, when Chris went from man to legend, becoming world champion, defeating Ruslan. So congratulations. I know it's a big day for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I forgot the. I mean, we spoke about this last week, but I forgot that it was actually tomorrow. So, yeah, big day in history and upset of the year for 2014 for Ring Magazine and life changing event for me and something I will never forget.
That's why I love saying former world champion Chris Algieri.
Except I forget which eye it was a lot. I always say I'm like it's this one. This one.
There it is.
But yeah, no, it was. I haven't watched that fight in a while. Maybe I'll watch it tomorrow.
That's awesome. You should. You deserve it, man. World champ. Great show. Hope everyone protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up. Go congratulate Chris Algieri on social media. We're out.
Subscribe, 10,000 subscribers.
We're closing in on 10K subscribers. On YouTube.
On YouTube. Yeah, that's big.
9.28. Wow. It was like 9.22 before.
Subs. Get those subs up. Let's go.
We're not on the air anymore, are we? All right. Goodbye.
Yeah.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.